Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. This monthly show airs the third Friday of each month and focuses on classical homeopathic treatment, how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. My name is Amy Lansky, and I'm broadcasting today from Portola Valley, California, in the San Francisco Bay Area. And today's show will air for the first time on May 17th, 2008. Well, welcome everybody. It's really spring now. It's beautiful here in California. Still a little cool. And as I'm recording this, it's actually May 1st, and I'm still getting over my trip back east. I went back east for the National Joint Homeopathic Conference in April. It was a great time. I actually went first and visited my mom in Buffalo, and she'll be 93 this month in May, so that's pretty exciting. And then from Buffalo, I went to Rhode Island, where we held this year's National Joint Homeopathy Conference. So one thing that's really great about this conference is that it brings together all the various homeopathic organizations and all the various different kinds of homeopathic practitioners, from doctors and nurses and naturopaths and to professional homeopaths, people who just practice homeopathy. And there are many highlights. Oh, and by the way, you know, the general public is also invited to this conference. And this year, for the first time, we held a completely separate track for complete beginners to homeopathy on Saturday. So there were introductory talks. And I'm sure we'll be doing that next year as well. So I encourage any of you to come to the national conference. In fact, next year it's going to be at the end of March, March 2009, in Seattle. The conference moves around each year to different parts of the country. Anyway, this year we had two keynote speakers at the conference. Andre Sain, who is a very well-known homeopath in Montreal, and Jeremy Scher, who is also a very famous homeopath and teacher of homeopathy, who lives in England and in Israel. So Andre gave an all-day seminar on Friday of the conference and also did Saturday morning of the main conference. Jeremy gave a Monday-Tuesday seminar and also did the Sunday morning portion of the main conference. And Andre was focusing on difficult cases and historical cases, and I got to say one highlight of the conference for me was this case he described from his own practice. He described it Saturday morning, where he was treating this woman who was basically on the verge of death in the hospital. The doctors had completely given up on her, and slowly he brought her back from the brink of certain death to health again. It was just amazing. This woman had gangrene of all her fingers and toes. She was in renal failure. She was severely septic. Her whole body was completely blown up in purple, and her face was so swollen. He said she looked like an alien from outer space. Her face was completely purple and swollen, so swollen that she couldn't even close her eyes. So her eyes were like stuck open because her eyelids couldn't even close. I mean, it was just a horrific situation, and the doctors had tried everything and had given up, and somehow just using the indicated remedies he brought her back. And there was a very funny part of this case where one of the remedies, he gave several different remedies over the course of treating this woman over I think a couple months, but one of the remedies was phosphorus. And as you know, you know, all of our remedies are you know, highly diluted. There's not, weren't actual phosphorus in these remedies. Anyway, at one point, I mean, the doctors could see that this woman was getting better. They didn't understand it, but anyway, at one point they kept him from giving her more phosphorus because they wanted to make sure that she didn't have too high phosphorus levels in her blood. So we all laughed because it just showed such a disconnect between the conventional medicine and their understanding of homeopathy and what it's really doing and how it works. I mean, they thought he was actually giving her real phosphorus. Anyway, I mean, physical doses of phosphorus. Jeremy Scher's presentations were also amazing. I mean, Jeremy is one of the best teachers out there. When you study with him, you never forget what he teaches. And one of the things he talked about was an AIDS project he's beginning in Tanzania, working with a homeopath and a homeopathic clinic there in Tanzania. And they're actually getting good results with AIDS there, AIDS patients. And Jeremy also presented an amazing AIDS case from his practice in England, where this man, a young man, went from AIDS to having normal levels of T cells and was able to get off the allopathic medicines for AIDS. So that was just an amazing case. So it shows that homeopathy really has application and promise for very severe forms of disease. So we shouldn't forget that. Even really horrible diseases like this woman dying in the hospital or AIDS. But to do this, you must be under the care of a very, very expert homeopath. Anyway, I also want to guide you. You know, this national conference is organized and put on by the National Center for Homeopathy. And I encourage all of you, as I always do, to join the National Center. We really need your support. The membership is $55 a year, and for that you get lots of things, including a subscription to an excellent magazine called Homeopathy Today. Most importantly, you're supporting homeopathy in this country and the efforts of the National Center to defend homeopathy, to contact the media. I mean, we've had media contacts with Newsweek and Consumer Reports and Parenting Magazine. Anytime there is a misrepresentation of homeopathy in the news, which is very frequently, because people tend to confuse homeopathy with anything that's alternative. But anytime there's misrepresentation, our media specialist, Pete Gold, tries to contact them, to talk to them, and he often succeeds. We've had some amazing contacts with some of these major media outlets. Anyway, this month's issue of Homeopathy Today came out, the April issue, and it has lots of articles in it this time pertinent to the spring, so articles on allergies and hives, and has very interesting couple articles on treating scarring, and just as a, you know, a little educational point, one of the most important remedies for scarring in homeopathy is called thiocyanaminum. It's a very long word, but if you go and you look for something that begins with T-H-I-O-S. It's the only remedy like that, and that's very good for scarring. You can get it in a cream form, so I recommend that. So, anyway, let's move on. Let's move on. As always, I want to remind you that this show is based on my book, Impossible Cure, and you can find out all about it at impossiblecure.com, and you can read. I really encourage everyone to check out the autism page. Lots of info there, including referral lists. The annotated archives of this show, which is like a short course on homeopathy based on my book and has lots of interviews of homeopaths. That can be found on the right side of the home page. Of course, the Cure Stories database, which is probably the most accessed part of my site. People looking for hope in other people's stories, and I encourage all of you who've had success with homeopathy to contribute something, even if it's small, because it really is a good deed, as I would say, a mitzvah, to help other people, encourage them to use homeopathy. Also, you'll find out how to order Impossible Cure, and always feel free to send me an email at Lansky@ImpossibleCure.com, or you can send it through the Autism One site, alansky@autismone.org. It all just comes to me. So, Today's show, I'm going to be talking about the content, essentially, of Chapter 10 of my book, Impossible Cure, and that is a discussion about the legal status of homeopathy in particular, but the health freedom movement in general. You know, health freedom, the protection of our right to choose the type of medicine we want to use, is critical, just critical to the autism community. And I'm sure you parents out there know that, because the only way that we're actually getting results is through alternative therapies in general. So we need to have access to homeopathy, to supplements, to, you know, whatever means that you're using to help recover your child. And unfortunately, there's lots of powers out there, in particular the conventional medical machine, that would like to keep you from having access to alternative medical modalities. And that's what the Health Freedom Movement is about. It's working and fighting to keep your access to whatever type of medical treatment you want to use for yourself and your child, to keep that accessible to you. So before I go on to that, I just want to also mention that next month, it's not for sure yet, but it looks like I'm going to be interviewing again John Melnichuk, who is the homeopath who treated my son Max way back when, and actually still treats my family. And he'll be talking about, you know, new ideas he has in treating autism. He spoke the first year of my show, I think back in 2005. But, you know, I thought I'd have him on again this year, because he treats many autistic kids, and I knew he'd probably have more to say that would be interesting for us. So that's next month, I hope. Okay, so let's move on. Let's move on to the legal status of homeopathy in the United States. So the very first thing to know, and, you know, by the way, a lot of what I'm going to say is relevant to alternative medicine in general today, but I am going to focus, too, on homeopathy. So the legal status of medicine in the United States is determined on a state-by-state basis. So there are really no federal laws that apply overall regarding practitioners of various treatments. Everything is regulated on a state-by-state basis. So that has positives and negatives. The positive is that states might have more flexibility or speed in changing their laws. And so, you know, your state might have a better health freedom climate in your particular state. The bad part is that another state may not have it, and it makes it very difficult to wage a battle to change practice laws on a state-by-state basis. You got to do it 50 times, and it costs a lot of money. So that's the important thing to first realize. The second important thing to understand, and which most people do not understand, and I know I didn't understand until I really got into this a few years ago. I got very involved in the health freedom movement, but I didn't realize there was a difference between certification and a license. So let me explain that first. When somebody says they're a certified homeopath or a certified anything, that means that they have studied that modality, and they've taken an exam administered by some official organization that represents that modality. So like an official exam that homeopathic certification organization creates, and they've passed that exam, and they are certified as a homeopath. They've passed a test that shows that they know homeopathy. Well, unfortunately, that has nothing to do with licensure. Licensure is whether or not the state says you can legally practice homeopathy. It's a legal permission, a license, like a driver's license, to practice whatever the modality is. And not every practice is licensed. There's not a license for homeopathy in any state, it turns out. As a separate practice. So what does that mean? That means that there's no state in the United States where the state gives out a license for homeopathy as a distinct profession. Now, of course, this was true 40 years ago for acupuncturists and chiropractors, too. There was no licensing for acupuncture or chiropractic. 40, 50 years ago, the only licenses available were for doctors, nurses, probably osteopaths, because they somehow maintained their legal status. I'll talk a little bit about how a lot of this evolved over the 1900s, and I think podiatrists, etc. But a lot of these alternative practices did not have any kind of license, and slowly people like the acupuncturists, the chiropractors, have been able to get licensing laws in each of the states. Luckily, however, and I'm going to be talking about how this happened, homeopathy is legal for unlicensed practitioners in now 6 states: Minnesota, Rhode Island, California, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Idaho. So those are the states that have a new kind of law in it available, called a health freedom law, that enables unlicensed practitioners to practice under certain requirements and restrictions. So let's go back to these licensing laws. Licensing laws are very expensive to pass. You have to pass a separate licensing law on a state-by-state basis. Now, right now, for example, the naturopathic physicians and naturopaths who practice a whole bunch of different kinds of modalities, there are schools that teach naturopaths to the level of close to a doctor. These are different than what are called traditional naturopaths, who only do these other kind of practices. Naturopathic physicians also do various medical practices in addition. So the naturopathic physicians are trying to get a license for themselves on a state-by-state basis. And what it amounts to is a ton of money, like on the order of like $1 to $3 million per state, and a legal battle, you know, to get a law passed in the state that gives them a license to practice. And the unfortunate thing about licensing laws is that each practice that passes one of these laws creates a turf that says, this is what we do, and we are the only ones who are allowed to do it. So for naturopathic physicians, they say, this is naturopathy. Naturopathic physicians, anyway, because they also want to do some medical things, and we are the only ones who want to do it. And unfortunately, that has created a turf war everywhere the naturopathic physicians have been trying to get licensing, because naturopaths tend to do a little bit of everything. They do, including a little bit of homeopathy. Some specialize in homeopathy, but most don't. They just learn a little homeopathy and they do a little bit on the side. And so if they want to claim that turf for themselves, they kind of get into a battle with homeopaths, who, of course, want to practice homeopathy, and all the other practices that naturopathic physicians do. So that's created a lot of controversy. It's blocked naturopathic physician licensing laws in some states. But when people have been reasonable and the licensing law says, well, of course, this doesn't block homeopaths from being homeopaths, and then they tend to pass more easily. So just to summarize, a licensing law takes a lot of money to pass and usually creates a turf war between practices, because everybody's trying to stake out their own turf. So what's our situation? Currently, other than those 6 states I mentioned, in every state, homeopathy is in this kind of legal gray area. If you're an unlicensed practitioner, even if you're the most experienced homeopath in the world, like Jeremy Scher, he's not a licensed doctor or licensed in any other medical profession. So even though he is one of the most famous experienced homeopaths who's treated AIDS in England and cured people, he is legally not really allowed to practice homeopathy in many states, even though he's an expert in it. But on the other hand, in most states, doctors are able to treat anybody with anything. It doesn't matter what their training are. So if you're an MD, you can usually practice homeopathy in any state, but there's no requirement that you know anything about homeopathy at all. There's no requirement for certification. So doctors are given carte blanche ability to treat anything with any means, in most states, regardless of their training in those things. So it's just this kind of crazy thing where people who know homeopathy can't practice it, but those who don't know homeopathy can practice it. So how have homeopaths been operating? Well, they've been kind of in this little gray zone. Now, even doctors, nurses, and other licensed practitioners who want to practice homeopathy in their state sometimes are confronted by the medical practice board and are also prosecuted for practicing homeopathy or other alternative practices, because then these authorities say, well, homeopathy is not really practicing to the standard of your training, of your license. We don't consider homeopathy good medicine, and so you're not practicing good medicine, and so you must stop, or they get their medical license revoked. And this has happened in some places. Doctors who try to do alternative things get slapped on the wrist for it and have to stop. And currently, there's only 3 states that actually have a specific licensing for homeopathy for doctors. And that is in Arizona, Connecticut, and Nevada. So in those 3 states, doctors have explicit permission to practice homeopathy. But where does that leave the rest of us, the unlicensed homeopaths? And that is the majority of homeopaths. What do all those unlicensed homeopaths in all those other states do? Well, what they do is they try to practice in such a way that they're going to have the least chance of getting in trouble with the authorities. So they basically try to practice as consultants. So they'll call themselves a homeopathic consultant, and they will try not to give any appearance that they're actually practicing medicine. So they will not conduct a physical exam. They will not prescribe a remedy for you. They'll just make a recommendation. They'll have that conversation with you, and they'll think about it, and they say, well, I recommend you take this. And then they won't give you the remedy either. They won't dispense it, because that would be more like practicing medicine. They'll say, well, here's what I think you should take, and here's how you can get it, and then you can go get it. So they try to have it more like a consultancy. They'll try not to advertise very much, stay below the radar. They'll be very careful about making any claims that they can cure or treat specific conditions. They'll make you sign a disclosure form that says, look, you know, I'm not a doctor, I'm just a consultant, I'm just making recommendations. So they'll try to, you know, work around it in this way. And usually this has worked. The authorities haven't gone after these homeopaths, but there have been cases where the authorities have gone after these people practicing in this way, and they go after them for practicing medicine without a license. So why is that true? How can that be? And it turns out that in nearly every state, there's a medical practice law that says basically nobody can diagnose or treat anything except a doctor, a licensed doctor, or a license in some other profession. And the definition of treating is very broad. Treating anything. So even, for example, if a massage practitioner, if massage isn't licensed in a state, then, you know, you can go to a massage person for just relaxation, you know. But if a massage practitioner says, well, this is therapeutic, this massage is going to help your back problems, or it's going to help your stiffness of your arthritis or whatever. If they make a health claim and they say that their massage is therapeutic, that is technically practicing medicine without a license. And so massage practitioners have also been very involved in trying to get health freedom laws passed, so that they can't be accused of practicing medicine without a license. So that's the problem. The definition of quote unquote medicine has been defined too broadly, and it bars basically anybody from doing anything to help anyone without being accused of practicing medicine without a license. So that said, by the way, there's usually caveats in those laws that say, like, that mothers can put bandages on their children, you know, family members and stuff. So that's how that problem is solved. Okay, so obviously, the fact that homeopaths are in this legal gray area, the majority of homeopaths, has been a real obstacle for the growth of homeopathy. And it's also been an obstacle for your health freedom as a client, as somebody who wants to access homeopathy. Why will people be interested in going to spend several years studying homeopathy when they come out, they're still not really legal, you know, completely legal in most states? How many people will go to, let's say, medical school and go through all that entails? Many, many years of study, studying something they're not really interested in, and in fact is like the opposite of what they believe in, just in order so that they can practice homeopathy legally. So very few people will do that. And on top of that, there's just not enough homeopaths, not enough money in each state to pay for the millions of dollars required to pass a licensing law for homeopathy, specifically for homeopathy. So that's just not going to happen. So what to do? Well, what I'm going to get into is a solution that people have come up with in the past 10 years called health freedom laws. And that will be the subject of the rest of the show. And that is how it's health freedom laws like this that have enabled homeopathy to be legal in those states I just mentioned: Minnesota, Rhode Island, California, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Idaho. And the goal of the health freedom movement is to pass a law like this in every state. And that's, you know, there's efforts now in about 30 states to get this to happen. But let's go back in time a little bit. It turns out that in the early 1900s, up until like the early 1900s, there were no licensing laws at all in the United States. There were medical associations, but there was no state regulations on legal practice of the various modalities. Now, after this period, I know in California, when there was licensing laws, there was a model for a while that allowed what they called natural practitioners to practice as well, but those disappeared too around World War II. And so basically, what the licensing laws became was a way for doctors, especially doctors, to maintain a monopoly, a complete monopoly over the healthcare system. And anybody who wasn't a doctor couldn't practice healing or medicine of any kind. But this new approach, the health freedom approach, decided, well, you know what? This isn't all about monopolies of the doctors or fights between the various practices. You know what? The real issue is health freedom for the consumer, for the patient. How can I, as a patient, be free to treat my body in the way I want to treat it if these laws are keeping practitioners from being able to practice? You know, how can I access homeopathy if that's what I want, if homeopathy isn't legal? So these laws, these restrictions are barring me from having health freedom. And it turns out this idea of health freedom is not a new one. In fact, one of the architects of the American Constitution was a doctor named Benjamin Rush. He was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. And he argued for, but he argued that there should be also a health medical freedom aspect to the Constitution, in addition to religious freedom and freedom of the press. And I have a quote here, which begins chapter 10 of my book, that Benjamin Rush said. He said, "The Constitution of this Republic should make provision for medical freedom as well as religious freedom. To restrict the art of healing to one class of men and deny equal privileges to others will constitute the Bastille or prison of medical science. All such laws are un-American and despotic." Well, I agree. So Benjamin Rush said we should have health freedom, and I agree. So it's up to us. It's up to us, the people, not to rely on our practitioners to fight and scrabble to legalize their practice. It's for us, the consumers, to say we want our health freedom. I mean, what is the anti-vaccination movement but claiming our health freedom as well, saying why should we be forced to take these vaccines and have our children harmed by them. We should have health freedom. And similarly, we should have the freedom to access the medicines and supplements and practitioners we want. So in each state now, about 30 of the states, there are health freedom organizations. And way back, not that far back, but in 2000, as part of my work for homeopathy, I realized that one of the very important things was to legalize homeopathic practice. So I got very involved with the health freedom movement in California. And as it turns out, this whole push to pass a health freedom law was led by our family's homeopath, John Melnichuk, who will be on the show next month. And so he enlisted me to be on the board of the California Health Freedom Organization. And some massage practitioners and traditional naturopaths and other forces within the alternative community in California got together. We worked for 2 years. As part of that process, I testified before a California Senate hearing on alternative medicine. It was very exciting, by the way, and I learned a lot about what it's like to testify before a Senate hearing. We were trained by lawyers to understand how to behave and how to respond, and it was really exciting. And our law was passed. In fact, it was passed unanimously by both the Assembly and the Senate in California. So California's health freedom law was passed in the fall of 2002 and went into effect January of 2003. So all of these various alternative practitioners in California are now free to practice. But let me start explaining now what the mechanisms and ideas behind the health freedom movement are. So here are some of the key ideas. The first one is that licensing laws traditionally have only been used, the real reason for them is to protect the public. So if a practice is not inherently risky and does not cause, not likely to cause harm, then there's no reason to protect the public from this practice. So there's really no license that's needed. There's no license that's really needed for a Reiki practitioner or a hands-on healer to protect the public. There's very low risk of harm from that, and there's very low risk of harm from homeopathy as well. So that's one of the first ideas of the health freedom movement, which is that licensing laws aren't really necessary all the time. They aren't necessary for a lot of these alternative medical practices. The second point that the health freedom movement makes is that these therapies are not medicine as is normally construed. What a homeopath does in giving remedies is not conventional medicine. And so they're not doing surgery. They're not giving prescription drugs. They're not doing anything that can be construed as conventional medicine, really. So they shouldn't be restricted by these medical practice laws. The third point, which I've said already, is that consumers should have a choice. They have to have an informed choice, and that we should trust the consumers who are educated by their practitioners to decide for themselves what they want to do, and shouldn't be treated like babies who have to be protected by the government. People don't need protection. They need information and options. And another point that should be made is that there are laws already that are, aside from the medical practice laws, laws against fraud, laws against unethical activity that protect consumers. So these separate kinds of laws are already protecting people from people who are out to cheat them or etc. So there's basically been two approaches to passing a health freedom law. And the first one was enacted by Minnesota, the very first health freedom law. Actually, I'll take that back. Two of the states I mentioned, which are Idaho and Oklahoma, had something akin to a health freedom law in place in the early 1900s, and they kept it. So I know Oklahoma had a health freedom law in place since 1920. So those two states already had something that was very close to the new health freedom laws. So those states always had some modicum of health freedom for alternative practitioners, Idaho and Oklahoma. But the other states that have passed since then, which are Minnesota, Rhode Island, California, and Louisiana, they have used basically two different models, two ways of passing their health freedom laws. So Minnesota was first, and how that all began was that in the mid-1990s, there was a naturopath, a traditional naturopath, who was prosecuted. It may have been a naturopathic physician, actually, who was prosecuted, actually, for giving patients colostrum from cows as a health practice. And they tried to accuse this naturopath of practicing medicine without a license. There started to be a whole effort to pass a naturopathic physician licensing law in Minnesota, but it turned into one of those turf battles I told you about. And so the people in Minnesota decided, you know, maybe we shouldn't fight against each other. Let's work together. Let's get all the alternative practitioners together and work for something that will enable all of us to practice. And the first thing they did was convince the Minnesota legislature to do a study and about alternative medicine. So in 1997, the Minnesota legislature commissioned Department of Health to do a report on complementary and alternative medicine. And they came up with these conclusions, that consumers should have a broad access to a complementary and alternative medicine, that the regulation should be minimized and should only be imposed to guarantee public safety, and that there needed to be explicit legislation that allowed the providers of these practices to do their practices without fear of prosecution. So the net recommendation of the study, and I'm going to quote here, was that freedom of practice legislation, which allows providers to continue service as long as the service is not shown to be dangerous or harmful, should be considered as a possible alternative to licensure or registration when appropriate. This may require making some changes in the Medical Practice Act or other licensure laws. So using this study that came out, the Minnesota people were successful in passing the first health freedom law in 2000. And this model created an explicit structure in the Minnesota legislature that was specifically for overseeing alternative practitioners. And the law specifically named types of practices, including homeopathy, that it oversaw. The law said that these practitioners could only be prosecuted for causing harm to patients or for ethics violations or fraud, etc. They could not be prosecuted simply for practicing medicine without a license anymore. But they also had restrictions put on them. They couldn't practice medicine. They couldn't puncture the skin, invade the body, give radiation, prescribe drugs, and things like that. So with the passing of this law, now alternative practitioners were free to practice. One thing about this law, though, is that it did not help doctors, licensed people in Minnesota, in their efforts to use alternative therapies. So it was still possible that if an MD, say, practiced homeopathy, that they could be slapped on the wrist for doing something that the medical board thought was not really medicine. So Minnesota was the first to go, and Rhode Island was second in 2002. They passed a very similar law and similar structure to Minnesota. So Rhode Island was next. And then came California, and that was the thing I was involved in. Now, the thing in California is we knew that the model that Minnesota and Rhode Island used would probably not work in California because it cost a lot of money for the state to run this office and to regulate the various practitioners. California wasn't likely to go for that. So we came up with a new model, which was very simple. It was just a one or two page bill. And this model basically just added an extra clause into the Medical Practice Act that exempted practitioners from being prosecuted for practicing medicine without a license as long as they adhere to certain things. So it said, as long as people didn't practice medicine, in other words, they had a list of things, didn't puncture the skin, invade the body, give radiation, prescribe drugs, make comments on prescriptions that doctors gave, stuff like that. As long as people weren't practicing medicine, as long as they didn't imply in any way that they are doctors, that you can't say that you're a doctor, you have to avoid saying you're a doctor. For example, when I was practicing homeopathy, even though I have a PhD, I would not let anybody call me Dr. Lansky because I'm not a medical doctor. So you can't imply that you're a doctor. You have to actively disclose to your patients and say, I am not a doctor. I am not a licensed physician. And here is my training. This is what I do. And you have to get them to sign a document that says they understand this. So if you do all these things now, this little clause added to the Medical Practice Act says you're okay. You can't be prosecuted. So this model, as I said, passed unanimously in both the Assembly and in the Senate and became law in January 2003 in California. And Louisiana also passed a law, I think in 2005, I'm not sure, which was very similar to the California law. So those are the two basic structures that have been used. New York has tried several times to pass a law with the California model, and they have failed. But they are now trying to pass a law with the Minnesota model, so that one's in process. And interestingly, their bill includes the mention of doctors, that doctors can also practice alternative medicine. And I also want to point out that in California, since the California Health Freedom Law passed, it has freed up things for doctors, though, too. You know, if unlicensed people can do these alternative modalities, it starts being easy for doctors to argue, well, why can't we do that? And so since the California law passed, another law has passed in California that has allowed doctors to use alternative medicine in the treatment of cancer. And that was a very big issue. You know, the cancer establishment doesn't want anybody using alternative practices. They want everybody to spend the big bucks on chemo and radiation and stuff. But doctors did manage to get a law passed in California that allowed them to use alternative practices for cancer. And I think the fact that we passed that health freedom law helped them to do that. So I've taught you about the health freedom movement. It's active in about 30 states. And if you want to find out about your state or start one in your state, if there isn't one, you should go to this website, nationalhealthfreedom.org. And that is sort of the central clearinghouse for the whole national health freedom movement. And, of course, there's other organizations out there, too, promoting health freedom. For example, organizations that are very concerned with various laws, the Codex laws, you may have heard about them. Because of the WTO, there's various efforts to what they call harmonize laws about supplements across all the countries in the world. And in Europe especially, there's like some really heavy restrictions on what are legal supplements and even what are legal remedies, homeopathic remedies. In some countries in Europe, you can't get a remedy over 30C, which is pretty shocking. And if there was an effort to harmonize all these laws across the whole world, that would restrict our access to homeopathic remedies. So that's a very bad thing. And certainly there's been threats about our access to supplements because of these harmonization efforts. So that's a whole nother topic. I'm not an expert on that, but we have to be very wary of these harmonization laws affecting us here in the United States and taking away our freedom to access the actual supplements and remedies. Right now, though, homeopathic remedies, interestingly, have been protected in the United States under the FDA since 1938. Turns out the senator who wrote the legislation for the FDA in 1938 was, his name was Royal Copeland, and he, believe it or not, was a homeopath. So he made sure that written into this FDA law was protection for the homeopathic remedies. And it's held ever since then. So homeopathic remedies are protected in the United States by the FDA, And there are certain remedies that are prescription only. And there's various laws that on those little tubes that you get in the health food store has to be indications saying, you know, this is good for that or that. But as we know, almost every remedy can be applied to almost any illness. It just depends what the pattern of symptoms are that are associated with the remedy. But neither here nor there, let's just say that the FDA does protect homeopathy at least up until today. So I would like to wrap it up, but let me just summarize by saying that health freedom is, as you know, so important for the autism community, and it is probably the only viable way to legalize homeopathic practice right now in this country. But ideally, really what we'd really like to see is that homeopaths could also be trained with more complete medical training like they were in the 1800s and operate more completely as doctors, so that they would have some medical training, have their homeopathic training, and could treat a much broader range of diseases in a more open and complete way, so that homeopaths could really go into the hospital like Andre Sain did. I mentioned right now in the United States that would be very unlikely that doctors would allow a homeopath to go into the hospital and treat you the way Andre. Now, Andre was a naturopathic physician, and the laws in Canada allowed him to go into the hospital and do that. But we would like to see homeopathic practice to get to the level that it was, let's say, in the 1800s in the United States, with homeopathic medical schools and doctors who are using homeopathy instead of allopathic drugs. And there is now, I mentioned it before on the show, a school that's just opening in Phoenix called the American Medical College of Homeopathy, and that's their goal. Their goal is to do that. So I really do support them in that effort. So, you know, if we want to envision the future for homeopathy, is that we have thousands instead of hundreds of excellent certified classical homeopaths who are able to practice the full spectrum of capability of homeopathy, and that provide patients with a full choice for the type of treatment they want and full access to all remedies, and that homeopathy can be practiced safely in this way. This approach, this possibility was true in the 1800s, and it exists today. This kind of full spectrum of homeopathic treatment exists in India, where they have homeopathic medical schools, where people can go to homeopaths as real doctors and get treated homeopathically. So it's possible we could get there someday, but we have to all unite together and work for it. So that's about all I have time for today. I'll be speaking to you again in June, hopefully with John Melnichuk. And I just want to remind you to check out ImpossibleCure.com, of course, NationalCenterForHomeopathy.org, and to join the new Yahoo group, Homeopathy-and-SN, for special needs, Homeopathy-and-SN at Yahoo Groups. So be well, and remember, there really is hope with homeopathy.